Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Hey, girl, do you want some trivia about this?
Oh, my God, yes.
Like, for context of what we're about to discuss?
Yeah.
So you know it's called Without Charity?
Uh-huh.
So one of Charity's friends, a couple of her friends, but one of them who's interviewed in this movie,
uh-huh,
their husband directed this thing. Super biased, super one-sided, and a little racist. Welcome to True Crime Obsessed, everybody.
You guys, before we get to the show, just a reminder, if you want more Jillian and me, get the Patreon. You know, we finished the Don't Fuck With Cats a couple weeks back. We're into the Aaron Hernandez documentary, which is bonkers.
Lots of thoughts and feelings.
I know.
Thrilled to be done with cats. Lots of thoughts and feelings in Aaron. It's a lot going on.
And then in addition to that, it's the Menendez murders. It's the Lacey Peterson.
Jodi Arias, Lorena, The Jinx.
The Staircase, Serial Season 1, Making a Murderer.
20 episodes of Making a Murderer. Can you stand it?
You guys, it's over 100 full bonus episodes to download and binge for $5 a month. You get it right the second you sign up.
And we're not cheaping out. It's full-length episodes.
Full-length episodes. No ads. You can't beat it.
And ad-free episodes of what's on the regular feed, too.
And that's exactly right.
Yeah.
There's some ringtones.
Yeah.
Come on.
After parties. The whole thing's a party, to be
quite honest.
I'll see
you over there.
See you over there.
I'll see you over there.
Drinks on me.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Girl, what are we talking about today?
You know what? We're talking about a documentary called Without Charity.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, you hated it. I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I take issue with a great many things.
I will say, it's a very interesting story. It's very tragic.
It's super tragic.
You know what all I could think of the whole time?
What?
Bum, ba-na-na-na-na.
Pow. Do you want to have fun?
Fun.
Oh, man.
That's from Sweet Charity, you guys, in case you're wondering.
Right.
Three construction workers were found murdered.
Killed execution style.
It doesn't happen here. It shouldn't happen here.
I want to know why this happened. I want to know who did this.
A simple burglary, authorities believe, started with this woman. 18-year-old Charity Payne led the group of suspects to the Lakeville home.
The Charity that I saw on the news was not the Charity that I knew.
She planned it. Not that this would have happened without her.
Everybody, they had their minds made up that she was the ringleader, the mastermind.
The attorneys argued Charity Payne was either a pawn or a kingpin.
The prosecutor hopes to add three counts of felony murder.
People like this just shouldn't be allowed to be on the streets.
You have small children. They're never going to know that my dad. They're never going to know their grandpa.
She
She was the first one to go to trial, and I knew at that point it was going to be all about someone needs to be punished.
They all think they have it figured out.
For me, when people ask questions, none of them ever ask the right ones.
Do you want to get us started?
I guess. Okay. We're in rural Indiana, the rural juror. There were actual rural jurors.
That's true.
Because this takes place in rural Indiana.
And so we meet this woman, and she tells us that, like, she's questioning the notion that this girl, Charity, quote, made a stupid mistake and spent 7 years in prison.
Because this is like the cold open, right? Before we get like, without Charity. I literally almost said Sweet Charity.
But the thing was, she gives us an example of what actually is a stupid mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, a stupid mistake is when your mom and dad aren't home and they left the car and you back it back and forth up the driveway and hit the garage door.
When your parents go out for the night and leave the keys in the car and you back the car up and down the driveway and end up banging into the garage.
Welcome
door.
To rural Indiana.
I was like, what
are you talking
is
about?
Is that a thing that people do?
Well, I actually, it's funny you say that. I had notes too, and I have it all like asterisk, and I say, doc makers.
Uh-huh.
Please make your lower thirds visible for people who use subtitles and or closed captions.
Oh my God,
put
yes.
them higher. Put them higher than the closed captions and the subtitles, and put them higher than like the little line that says how long you've been watching the movie.
Uh-huh.
Because when we pause and take our notes, I can't see anything. And I can't see anything through the subtitles either.
Yeah.
All right, so we meet Mike. We're going to call him Mike G.
Can we just call him Detective Mike?
Detective Mike.
Yeah.
Perfect. So it's September 14th, the year 2000. St. Joseph County Police, they get a phone call, and they learn, tragically, that three construction workers were found dead on a job site.
If I had to describe the crime scene in one word, it would be horrific. You've got three hardworking men, construction workers, at a job site. They're down on the ground, face down, hands bound behind their backs. And each one of them executed.
Everyone in town is like scared, confused, angry.
Yeah, we're seeing all these people who are just like, we don't know who did this. Literally, like, lock up your kids, lock up your wife. Like, there's a mad murderer on the loose.
Right. And we meet a lot of family members of the victims. And we get a shit ton of on-screen text. Like, way too much.
I stopped writing it down. It was way too much.
Telling us, like, crucial information. Yeah. Then get a narrator. Or have your talking heads tell us.
You guys, I'm available for narration. If you need a screaming Same. Queen to narrate your documentary, hire me.
Yeah, that would actually be great.
I want it to be like a really serious documentary that then it's like, and then!
Yeah, or if you need someone to be totally over it.
Right.
You know my number. Or mad. If you need
Press
the rage.
At truecrimeobsessed.com, you guys. Yeah. We're available.
If you need the rage of me being like, you guys, you're never going to believe it. Oh my God, they're back. Oh my God, they're back.
Don't you offer this because you're going to have 80 offers in the
no.
morning and I'll never see you again.
Nobody wants that shit. Remember when you were like, you're going to leave me because you're going to go write a book. What book? You're going to leave me because you're going to go do stand up. What stand up? There's nothing out there for me but this. This is it. I'm doing it.
Someone's going to steal her from me.
Look, that's a very nice thing to say, but I am not in any demand. I promise you. There are no book deals. No one thinks I'm funny other than you. I am just mad. I'm just an angry woman doing my goddamn best. So we learn via on-screen text that police investigations lead to multiple arrests.
Right.
Here are some names for you. Philip Stroud, who's 21 years old. Ronald Carter, Carell Seabrooks, and Tyrone Wade.
And then Charity Payne.
And Charity Payne,
18.
Who's 18. Yeah, all of the men are black. Charity is white.
The four individuals involved in this case, the four suspects, had made a plan to burglarize this home. They had received information from Charity Payne that the people who lived at this home were extremely wealthy and were told that there would be a lot of money in the house.
They had learned information about the home through Charity, who had used to date the son of the family there.
Right, so it's the Sears home, and John Sears is her ex-boyfriend. And according to the cops, Charity was like, hey guys, these people are super rich, it'll be a big score, go forth and burgle.
But take one look at that house and you know. I mean, my God, this thing is a fucking mansion.
It's like a farmhouse barn mansion, like gorgeous.
Yeah, they've got the main house and then the farmhouse. They've got a pool. They have their own pond.
Pond. Leave the ducks and pond life out of this.
The waterfowl?
I ask you.
Had nothing to do with this.
Leave the pond life alone.
The four individuals got up that day on the 14th of September in 2000. Right? They left Walnut Street in South Bend en route out to the house on Oak Road to the Sears property. Along the way, they stopped at a gas station at Prairie and Olive Streets. They went inside, they bought some gloves and some other items, and then they drove to the home. The gate evidently was open. They were told by Charity that if the gate was closed, that indicated that somebody was home.
Charity says this thing that makes zero sense, but she tells them, if the gate is wide open, go on in. And if it's closed, someone's home.
Right.
And I'm like, so that, like, everyone knows that if the gate's open, no one's home?
Right. Everyone in the town just knows.
Just know? Like, it's such a, or like, I mean, Charity does, but like that, like, why leave the gate open if you're leaving? I like, close the gate behind you. Right. Would you grow up in a barn? Oh, wait. So apparently the construction workers who were working at the house accidentally left the gate open. Remember,
right.
Gate open, nobody home.
Yeah.
But they left the gate open and these three construction workers were there. The construction workers are named Corby Myers, Lynn Ganger, and Wayne Shoemaker.
Right. So once they see the construction workers, apparently in that moment, they just make the decision they got to murder these guys.
Philip Stroud makes the call.
Philip Stroud made the decision that they were going to have to kill these people. Because they had seen them, they had seen their vehicle, possibly even seen the plate on the car.
0 to 100. How do you not pretend to be delivering a pizza? How do you not pretend to be like, oh, oops, like Ron.
But I forgot the pizza.
Right.
All four of us forgot the pizza. I gotta go buy.
But I'm just saying, there's a whole lot of options between like run like hell.
Run, yeah.
And tie these people up and murder them.
Or just say, oh, I'm looking for, is Frank here? No.
Yeah.
He's not.
Right.
Fellas, we gotta go. Like it could be awkward, but everyone could live.
But so we learn via on-screen text.
It's insane.
I know you hate this documentary so much.
I mean, it's just the beginning.
So according to one of the four guys, Ronald Carter, the workmen begged for their lives after they were restrained. So Philip Stroud, the one who ends up doing the killing, while his compatriots are tying the guys up, he just starts shooting them.
Right. And so it's like we get like this is a quote from the deposition of Robert Washington Jr. And I'm like, who is that?
I know.
And it's fine if there's a deposition that wasn't recorded.
Yeah.
We have seen that many times. I think in Who Killed Garrett Phillips, there was a deposition that wasn't recorded. But guess what? Our friend, the lawyer, Manny, read it.
Right.
I know we're dealing with a murder. I know a triple murder, and that's horrible, but I'm just saying.
I know. The thing is, you guys, this is literally episode 118. Jillian and I could make an Oscar-winning documentary today.
I mean, at this point.
We absolutely could.
We'd have everyone's slate beforehand. A perfect amount of on-screen text, big enough to see. Every time someone comes on the screen, even if we've met them 10 times, you're going to get a lower third for context.
Oh, my God.
I need to know, are you a defense lawyer or prosecution? Are you an aunt or are you the niece? I don't know. I need to know who you are so I can form an opinion.
Uh-huh. And every time, the 10th time they're on screen, I want the name.
Every single time. Every time.
Uh-huh.
Just in case. What is it? Look, I used to video edit. It's not that hard. It's actually quite simple. They have a lot of just templates. It's all done for you. It's very easy. Okay. So we learn, more on screen text, we learn that after shooting the victims and taking their wallets, they burglarized the Sears home and then they left the property.
Yeah.
So now, you know, the news breaks.
On Thursday, three construction workers were found murdered. And tonight, we may know why.
18-year-old Charity Payne led the group of suspects to the Lakeville home.
So we meet Monica Payne, and she's Charity's mother.
Oh, God.
And it's just red flags galore from the get-go. Because she's like...
We were so close. I mean, we were like... best friends.
You guys,
I know I have in my notes,
best
no!
friends. You're not. And she goes, you know, we were so close, we were best friends. Maybe I should have paid more attention when she quit talking to me. What? Best friends.
I know.
Followed by, maybe I should have paid more attention when she quit talking to me. Yeah, I'll say. Sure.
If the option is to pay more attention or less, I'm gonna go with more.
Oh, please, you of all people. Daisy girl, call me when you're ready. Don't worry. So then we meet Marcy's husband. This is his film.
Oh.
Marcy.
So we're basically now we're meeting Charity's like childhood friends. And Marcy tells us.
Charity is the first friend I ever remember having. We went through elementary school, middle school, and high school all together. Later on, you know, with the things that happened, you could see the pattern forming.
You know, later on, looking back, you could really see the pattern forming.
Yeah, Marcy's not alone.
I know. I know.
Now we meet problematic Emily.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because Emily is very well spoken. She seems very smart and sweet and sincere, but I've got a lot of questions for Emily.
Let's break it down.
Okay.
I think I need to stop. It's like, you know, when you're ramping up in a fight and you're like, I love you. I'm just going to take a deep breath. Can we just 5 minutes? I feel like this is going to become an avalanche. I need to put this fire out. Emily, girl, we got to talk. We have to have a conversation. So Emily says she hung out with Charity every single day that summer, and every single day that summer she felt unsafe. Emily, let's start there. What?
That summer, we were hanging out together every day, and almost once a day, found myself in a position where I did not feel safe.
Every single day. So by July, of every day feeling unsafe, Emily, who seems pretty together, is going to say, let's go to August. Let's keep this going. What? Then she's like...
Because she just doesn't understand that people you've known for 20 years, you should trust a lot more than people you've known for 5 minutes.
Which is fine. Okay. Emily.
That's good advice. Sure.
Then problematic Emily says the following. Like, she's just like, she's really outgoing, and that's great.
I mean, she's just got that kind of personality. She's really outgoing, and she really likes to talk to people, which is great, but she doesn't understand that there are certain indicators that maybe they're not the kind of people you want to be talking to.
Then she quadruples down. Problematic Emily says.
She never really knew that you should be afraid of certain people, or maybe you shouldn't let people in quite as much as she always just did.
And I'm like, Emily, do you mean black people? Yes. People of color, specifically black people.
Yes, yes.
Say it, Emily.
I know.
Horrible. And a reason I really don't like this documentary is because it feels like, is this like the thesis of the documentary? Do they agree with her?
See, my thinking on it was I had all the same thoughts. The problem with that for me with the documentary is that the documentary thinks it's documenting the truth. The documentary doesn't have enough awareness to realize how fucking problematic and racist that is.
Like, he's behind the camera being like,
exactly.
Absolutely. And
exactly.
Not behind the camera being like, can we get someone for maybe show the other side of this? Because this is about Charity, right?
Right.
So they're trying to paint, like, Charity didn't know any better. Clearly. They're trying to make us feel sympathy for Charity.
Right.
Spoiler, I do not.
No. That's coming through loud and clear.
Is it? Great.
No spoiler needed.
Great? Okay, cool. Just want to really, really always want to make sure. Sometimes I'm a little...
Subtle?
Subtle.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
So we meet Charity Payne today. She is here talking to us, to the camera, to her friend's husband, who's making this film about her.
In this initial interview where we see her, she does not look like she's in good health. No. She's got bags under her eyes. She's gaunt. Her hair is falling out.
At first, you're kind of like, oh, God, like, what happened to her?
Yeah. So here's the thing. We're going to get Charity's story from Emily and Charity. So problematic Emily is telling us the day before the murders, Charity was borrowing her car.
That day, she was borrowing my car to go to her work orientation, but I didn't hear from her for a really long time after she dropped me off at work.
So what happened, apparently, is that Charity drops Emily off at her job and then takes Emily's car to this job orientation, whatever the hell that means.
Yeah, now we're with Charity.
Right. So then Charity gets lost and ends up in a neighborhood she doesn't know.
Didn't recognize any of the streets or people and made a wrong turn at a stop sign. And at the stop sign, Philip then was in the middle of the road and saying, hey, you know, come over here, hey.
So she makes this wrong turn, and suddenly, like, in the middle of the street is Philip Stroud, who we learn the next day commits these murders.
Exactly.
So this is the day before the murders.
And so according to Charity, he's standing in the middle of the road and they just start chatting.
He's like, hey, do you want to like pull over and chat? And she's like, I do have that work. You know what? Yeah.
Right. Because I'm like, wait a second. Are you like on your way to a job interview or an orientation or something?
Well, he had started talking to me through the driver's side of my window. We had talked about friends we had in common, names, you know, that popped up. I was like, hey, I know that guy. So a lot of common grounds.
So Charity's like, I'm pulled over. I should be at work, but whatever. Right. And I'm talking to this guy I don't know because I made a wrong turn in this small town where everybody knows everybody and everybody knows every square inch of the place.
And this crazy person standing in the middle of the street. So I said, get in, let's chat.
Let's hang out.
And this isn't like a hey girl, hey girl. They're having a conversation because Charity's telling us that like they had a lot in common.
Right. So Charity was dating this guy, John Sears.
I know that John, the boy I was dating, knew a guy named Pumpkin who is actually Philip's cousin.
So then apparently, according to Charity, Philip Stroud is like, oh, hey, can you give me and my friend Tyrone a ride real quick? Can you just drive us to the Sears house?
This is very confusing. She's dating this guy, John Sears, who lives in this big fancy house. And I guess she mentioned it to them and now they want to go see it.
And then she's like, well, at one point he made it clear he had a weapon. And I'm like, so when did you welcome him into your friend's car? Don't you have a job interview or orientation or whatever? You're lost. You're chatting it up in the street. This guy's a weapon. It's your friend's car. Where am I? Where am I? Can you just drive us to the Sears house real quick?
They never used the word burglary or robbery, that they were going to go actually commit a crime. At that point, I was like, I don't really have much choice but to do what he's asked me to because he's in my car with a weapon. And he had already told me, I do remember that we don't have to stop. That was a very, very clear memory I have. He said, we're not going to stop or we don't have to stop or anything. We were just going to drive by it. They just wanted to see it.
It's like, you don't even have to stop. We just want eyes on the house. We want to see if it's like as big, as fancy as you say.
Right.
So she does this.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, like out of nowhere, we learn that Charity and the suspects that we mentioned earlier who were arrested, they all go to this house on Walnut Street.
Yes.
And through on-screen text, we learn that Charity and Phil were in the bathroom for quite some time.
Right. She just met this guy in the middle of the street an hour ago.
And even in the deposition, he was like, they were in the bathroom for a little while, whatever they were doing. Oh.
Right.
Okay. Then by the time they leave, they're talking about what they call a lick. And I'm like, what the hell is a lick?
It takes a really long time for someone to tell us that a lick is a robbery.
Yeah, because they were in the bathroom for a long time. I didn't know what was happening. I had to scroll through my notes and put it at this section.
Totally.
You guys, a lick is a robbery. I didn't know that. Learning something new every day.
Uh-huh.
So now we're back to Emily, problematic Emily.
Yep.
And she's like, so Charity was super late dropping the keys off. And I'm like, I hope you also mean bringing the car back. But I don't know how they do things in rural towns. So Charity hands problematic Emily the keys. And she's like, girl, we need to talk. I really, really, really need to talk to you.
Something was wrong. I didn't know what it was. And I didn't know it was as bad as it was. But I know that when she handed me those keys, she was not anything except for scared.
Emily's like, I could tell something was wrong. How could you tell?
I know.
With the girl, I need to talk to you. With the I need to talk to you eyes. Every girl knows the I need to talk to you eyes. If you have a certain type of relationship, you don't even need the words. You just make the eyes. We can make the eyes at each other.
1,000,000%.
Girl, no. I need to talk to you now. I need to talk to you right now. Get the cocktails. I need to talk to you right now. Meet me in the bathroom, please. Oh my God, the tea is scalding.
So the last thing we see of Charity, she's got to talk to Emily. And then the next day the murders happen.
Right. And then it's like all over the news, the Sears property. And I'm like, right, her ex-boyfriend's home. So Charity sees the news.
Uh-huh.
And breaks down and just starts screaming from every rooftop. I'm responsible for the murders. I'm responsible for the
murders.
Uh-huh.
I received the phone call the morning after the homicides from our dispatch center saying that a woman had called in, that Charity Payne worked for her. And on the previous evening, Charity Payne had broke down after finding out that the triple homicide had occurred and started crying and said that she thought she was responsible for those deaths.
Her mother says, Charity calls me at 2 a.m., wakes me up out of a dead sleep and says, Mom, I need a ride home from work. And I'm like, girl, you got the job? You booked it? You got the gig? You didn't even show up for orientation. You got it. Offer only. Charity is offer only. She booked it. No callbacks, no nothing. She booked it. She skipped the callback, as a matter of fact. She booked it. So now, like, it's 2 a.m. She gets the ride home from her mom. And the next morning, the cops show up and they want to talk to Charity. And I'm like, did she call the cops on herself? How do they know?
They thought that she might know something about what happened out there. And they said, would you mind going with us down to the special crimes place and talking to us? And I still had no idea. Nothing. You know, if I'd have had a clue, I'd have never let her go with them.
And the mom says, like, I just didn't know enough to say no.
And, you know, they take her downtown and basically they say, you know, you're just here to identify people. We've seen this 100 times.
This is right out of Who Killed Garrett Phillips.
Right. So they keep her there. The cops say 7 hours.
So this becomes very important, you guys.
Remember that.
Yeah.
The cops say she was there for 7 hours. And they're like, most of that time she was just waiting around. I was like, what, is she on a movie set? No.
Right. And Charity says she was there for 12 hours.
Right.
And she was like in and out of sleep. She was really tired.
And so the cops say,
through the investigation, we were able to learn that Charity Payne had met four male blacks at Scottsdale Mall the previous day.
Charity met, I quote,
I know,
four male blacks at the mall the day before the murder.
I have this in huge letters. Like, just him saying it like that is so telling. Mm-hmm. You would never say four whites. It's so specific and so just a part of the way they fucking talk.
Absolutely. And you know, we've also seen this too. There are some, like, how cops describe the unsub. There are some things,
yes,
where it's like, just the facts, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
Totally. But that's not what this is.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
It's really not.
So Detective Mark is telling us, 2 days before the murder, Charity and Emily are at the mall.
Right. And they meet a couple guys. Two of them, Carell Seabrooks and Curtis Smith Jr., were at the scene of the murder.
Event, like 3 days later or
that
whatever.
Philip Stroud commits, like,
yeah,
the construction workers.
Yeah.
But we learn from Emily, problematic Emily, that, uh-huh, at the mall, Charity gives these strangers that they just met, not just Charity's number, but Emily's phone number.
I would always find myself going, why did you do that? Why did you give those people my phone number? Why did you let those guys in the back of my car? I mean, she just was always doing things that any rational person would know was not a safe thing to do.
This is one of those moments when Emily felt unsafe. Remember how Emily every single day felt unsafe that summer? In one moment, that was the moment that day.
Maybe August will be different, she says. Emily, why every day did you hang out with her then?
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Okay, so we're back in time to the day before the murder, when Charity borrowed problematic Emily's car, saying that she had that job orientation to go to.
Right. So the cop says Charity had no intention of going to the job orientation. And I'm like, yeah, I know. She just wanted to smoke weed.
So Charity says she got lost and ended up in this, like, bad neighborhood. Mm. When in reality, or at least one of the realities, we're being told, no, she went to this, quote, bad neighborhood looking to buy pot.
Right.
Which is also makes sense why when this guy is standing in the middle of the road, she's like, well, he lives here. Maybe he'll know something.
Exactly.
All indications are that Charity had every intent of finding some marijuana and contacting these individuals to do it.
And so, like, then she's like, that's not the case. But I never said I was completely innocent, Charity.
I know.
She goes back. She teeters back and forth a lot.
Yeah.
So here's what we learn that she told these men about the Sears house.
Right.
And this is from, like, the news or newspaper or something, right?
Yeah.
Four things.
Yeah.
From court documents of a videotaped interview, 18-year-old Charity Payne told investigators that she told the other suspects about the family's financial status.
One, the Sears, they're rich. It's going to be a great big score.
I grew up in a town with rich Searses as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like Sears and Roebuck?
No, but they were like...
No.
No, but they were like Mayflower family.
No way.
Yeah, because I grew up on Cape Cod, so we had a lot of those.
Oh, we know. The Cape. I grew up on the Cape.
I grew up in the poor town.
No. Mayflower, that's legit.
It's true.
Speaking of racists. Yeah. Thanksgiving was a genocide. Anyway, two.
She told the other suspects how to bypass the home security system.
How to bypass the alarm. Okay. Uh-huh. Getting a little more responsible every step of the way.
Yep.
Number three, when the maid service was scheduled. How do you know all this about your ex-boyfriend's family? And four, their private unpublished number, which is like, why do you need that for a robbery? What are you going to call them? You already know if the gate's open, come on in. To call them. Also, she's setting up her boyfriend's family, her ex-boyfriend's family. It's crazy. Like, I don't know why she's doing this.
I know. It makes me never want to meet another person ever.
Same. I didn't need much, but... And the thing is, Charity's like, yeah, I told them about the house. I told them it was going to be a big score. So she admits that she, like, set up her ex-boyfriend's family.
Yeah, it's weird because we learn on the news that in court documents, she told that to the police. So, like, she's admitting it.
Yeah.
But then we get Charity to camera being like, you guys, I didn't do that.
I didn't sit in the car with Philip that day and plan a robbery.
That's not what we said, Charity. We said that you did four things.
Right.
None of those things include planning a robbery.
That's right.
Come on now. Come on.
You would be a really good prosecutor.
I'd be great. I'd be really good. So now we meet Chris Toth, not Chris Noth.
I have the same thought. Mr. Big is here. No, he's not.
No, he's not. So he's the prosecuting attorney. And we learn that 2 years go by between Charity's arrest and the trial.
About 2 years had lapsed between when the crime happened and when she went to trial. And I could tell that things weren't going so well as far as the way that they were portraying her in the media. It was a huge case. It was publicized nonstop. Every chance they had to bring it all up, they did in the media. So at that point, I felt like everybody, if you talk to any random person on the street, they would know about the case based on, you know, the things that they'd watched on the news. So I didn't think that there wasn't a single person in this area who didn't already have a predetermined opinion of her before the trial. So I felt like there was no way she was ever going to get a fair trial in this area.
This is their OJ and their, like, Lacey Peterson case in the sense that it was just everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's 2 years of the local Nancy Grace screaming about this case. Can you imagine the rural Indiana Nancy Grace?
No.
Can you stand it?
But yeah, all of Charity's friends are telling us the media portrayed her as a villain. She was never going to get a fair trial.
So right now, Charity is charged with felony burglary, but the prosecutor wants to charge her with 3 counts of felony murder. But this lawyer is like, this was not a popular decision among my colleagues.
The fact that I had charged her with felony murder was not necessarily a popular decision among some of my colleagues, just simply because some of them felt, well, she wasn't present. She wasn't there. And in essence, how would she have known that that was going to happen? And all she knew maybe was that this burglary was going to happen. And the way our law is if you're with a group of people and you're helping this group of people commit a crime, everyone's responsible for everyone else's actions. In this particular situation, if you go out to break into a home and someone dies as a result of it, that's felony murder.
If none of these people knew this family before they met you, and then you tell them how to sneak into the house, how to bypass the alarm, mm-hmm. when the maid's going to be there and what the phone number is. Also, if the gate's open, come on in.
I'm not calling her Charles Manson,
right.
But this is why Charles Manson died in prison.
Right, because...
He wasn't there.
No, and this is why the law is set up this way. If you are the one that gives all the information, then you are as culpable as whoever does the worst thing when it happens.
Right.
And I think that's the way the law should be.
And then we meet John Sears, the ex-boyfriend.
Right, we see him on the stand at Charity's trial where he's like testifying against her.
Right. So this triple murder happened at the Sears house, right? John Sears is Charity's ex-boyfriend. So
yeah.
She was setting up her ex-boyfriend's house to be robbed.
Right.
So John Sears is testifying.
On the witness stand today, that ex-boyfriend also talked about a letter Payne once wrote to him. The letter pointed out how easy it would be to rob the restaurant Payne was working at the time.
She wrote him a letter, and I'm like, I hope you mean email. Because the language of it is very, like, email. It's very,
yeah.
You don't write, because she curses a lot in it.
I have in my notes, oh my God, she swears a lot in this letter.
And I feel like you don't, if you're writing a letter like that, you don't curse as much.
Right,
am I naive?
No, I totally agree with you.
So this email, hopefully, says, she's like, John, the restaurant I work at, it's super easy to rob. Let me explain how. You guys, these are her words. She curses a lot. Mom, I'm sorry. She says, and I quote, So they fucking leave the side door open for the employees to go in and out of. And on any night, you could just fucking mask up and fucking go in with a gun. Charity. Sweet charity.
The fact that she says mask up,
and
mask
go
up.
In with a gun. So I'm just like, charity girl.
I know. And so the point is, the prosecutor is saying,
I felt that the fact that we found this other letter where she was attempting to have someone else commit a serious crime. Kind of negated that argument that this was just a mistake because she did it before.
The idea that she would never do something like this,
right.
The idea that she didn't have it in her brain to think about something like this,
it's out the window.
Out the window because she's tried to get people to do things like this before.
Yeah.
And we learn that these trials go on for 7 years.
Right, because there are 5 people on trial.
And all the retrials and the, right, you know, appeals. And the appeals and all of that.
Then we just get Charity crying about how hard this was for her.
I know.
To know yours. Know yourself better than anyone else. Nobody's listening. It's horrible. To stare at people and watch them judge you, and they just don't.
There's no awareness for her role in it. There's no awareness for the victims or their families or anything. And is she sorry? She doesn't say their names.
Yeah.
She's just like, you guys, it was really, I told them how to bypass the alarm system, but right. Like, stop. I'm like, charity girl.
I know.
So anyway, she's found guilty.
The jury decided she was just as responsible for the triple homicide as anyone who carried it out. Charity Payne left the courtroom in tears, facing hard time, learning a lesson the hard way.
This is crazy. We get more on-screen text. We get the sentences. Tyrone Wade gets 275 years. Karell C. Brooks gets 180 years. Ronald Carter, who we find out later, like, turned state's evidence, gets 45 years. Philip Stroud, who was the one who did the actual shooting and mm-hmm. killing, gets the death penalty. And Charity Payne gets 165 years.
Which is crazy. I don't like Charity.
Yeah.
I think 165 years is a lot.
Yes.
Of time. Those are two facts.
Yes. So now the biggest shock of this entire thing.
Oh my God.
And the moment where I sat up in my chair and kind of couldn't believe it.
I have oh shit in my notes.
I know. We're on death row and we're talking to Philip Stroud, the guy who pulled the trigger.
And we hear from him his side of the story.
My first memory of Charity Payne was, I'm on the block. Standing out, basically doing what I was doing every day was, hustling, in my neighborhood. And where I'm from, any car that we don't recognize, it's really not supposed to be no cars that come through our neighborhood that we don't recognize, So then when I seen that it was a female, then I just stood in the middle of the street and stopped the car, That was really it. That's how I first met her.
And this also matches up with Charity, like this guy standing in the middle of the street yep. and she's driving down it.
And if you remember, Charity is like by her own admission on the prowl for weed. So like when this guy stops her car, she's like, let me talk to this guy and see if he knows where I can get some.
And Philip is like,
I think we went looking for some weed or something. Stopped by one of my spots and got some weed. And I think we smoked. Matter of fact, I know we smoked a blunt.
And then he also says, like, there isn't a whole lot I can say about Charity Payne because I knew her for, like, 1 second of my life.
Yeah, and then on top of this...
You guys, this was like...
I'm like, way to bury the lead.
I know.
Philip confesses.
The reality is I killed 3 people. I killed Wayne Shoemaker, Corbin Myers, and Lane Ganger. And I want to make that clear.
And he's like, yep, I killed those 3 people. The other 3 men who were there, I pulled the trigger all 3 times.
Then he says, I feel like I'm going to sob.
Yeah.
He says,
because I know in prison, everybody else in this prison is innocent of the crime that they were convicted of. But I'm not, and I'm not proud of that. And it took me a long time to admit that, for a long time. I had to even get over the mental hurdle of referring to my victims as my victims. I would always say the victims to like separate it from myself, another way of really not taking ownership.
They're my victims. I did this. And I will say that this tape of him in this interview is some of the most powerful stuff I've ever seen.
Yeah, because he says, like, as many ways as he can.
I did this and I'm fucking
sorry. I accept full responsibility. This is nobody else's fault. I killed three innocent men for nothing.
And he says their names. Yes. He says all of their names and he says them multiple times. And this does not excuse what he did.
Of course not.
But you never see this. In all of the documentaries that we've covered, we've never seen somebody who actually did the crime really fully accepting ownership for it. And you can see the remorse in his face. Mm-hmm. He talks about how sorry he is. You know that if he could take it back, he would. It doesn't change the fact that he killed these people and it was a monstrous thing that he did.
Right.
And he ruined lives and he deserves the punishment that he has. The one thing we need to say is that Phillip's death sentence is commuted to a life sentence.
Yes.
So he's not sentenced to die anymore.
Yep.
This interview with him was so, so powerful. And this like bad documentary, this part makes it totally worth it to me.
I hear you. I just wish they would have said, then why? I wanted, if he's going to be so open and honestly, like you said, the adult in the room, he has the most responsibility and ownership, but he's also the most vocal about it.
Yeah.
I would love for Charity's friend's husband to say, then why?
Right.
If you've come this far and all this time to be able to say, I accept full responsibility, then can you tell me what happened that day?
Yeah.
What happened when you got to the Sears house? Why did you kill these people? Why didn't you turn around and go away?
You know, and that right there, I agree with you on the Chiron and the lower threat, all of that I totally agree with. This is where a novice filmmaker shows that he's a novice filmmaker.
Absolutely.
I want to know more about this guy's story. I think it's important to know. And we see old tape of him where he's like coming in and out of the courtroom and he says he was blaming everybody else and he only thought about how it affected him. In the courtroom, he's angry and he's yelling. And and now in this moment, he's just fully accepted responsibility. And you can see that like he's going to do the work for the rest of his life what's the word? You can never make up for it.
Yeah, I'd like to go into that more, but the documentary didn't.
And exactly.
So that's why we're at a loss for words because they didn't give us any more information.
Exactly. So in conclusion of the Philip Stroud section, we wanted a lot more from him in this, but that was not so much to be.
Right. And then instead of going in on this guy and his journey and his thought process and what, we just cut to Charity again.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, my lawyers called me in March of 2007 and they were like, how would you feel about going home today?
And we're like, what?
Bitch, what?
You know, we get the prosecutor guy back and he's saying to us, like, we basically had to let her go on a technicality that didn't even exist when we were questioning her.
Right.
After we did that and tried the case, another case came down from the appellate court that established kind of what they call a per se rule that after so many hours is looked upon that as a coercive kind of interview situation. And we happen to go beyond the certain amount of hours that this case set.
And look, the technicality is a good one.
Like, it is.
And I applaud Indiana because it seems like their judicial system, at least from what we learn about it here, is really trying to do the right thing. Because they say that like there was a case that made it all the way to the Indiana Supreme Court or whatever, where they had interrogated this guy for too many hours and the interrogation became coercive.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that case was overturned, that stipulation became retroactive to all other cases. So remember in the beginning, when she said that they questioned me for 12 hours and he said they questioned me for 7 hours, however long the cops actually questioned her was beyond this new limit.
It's 11 hours.
Is that what it is?
It's 11 hours until, and then it's considered coercive. She was interviewed for 12.
And that's the thing. Because of that technicality, what really happens is she gets a new trial, technically.
Right.
And she goes in front of a judge and the judge just throws the whole thing out.
And says, you know, you have time served. And she walks out of prison after 7 years.
Right.
And so my thing is, what about the three other men of color who are in prison when we have Philip Stroud saying, I did it, full responsibility? Like, where's their technicality?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, look, I'm with you a million. The system is totally rigged against people.
And the documentary
of color.
Go into that.
Right.
Like, the documentary should be outraged by this.
Right.
And they're not.
Right.
And that is infuriating to me.
Yes.
And the thing is, Charity to us today in the interviews for this documentary says, like, I'm not innocent here. Like, yes, I brought them to the house. And yes, I told them about the alarm. But then this, it really comes to a head, her complete refusal to apologize. It's this weird dynamic of like, she's admitting that she's not fully innocent, but she's also not taking any responsibility for anything.
It is kind of a jarring moment because the filmmaker says, like, why won't you just apologize?
And the smirk and the shrug she gives is just, it makes me so mad.
Why say it? Because you can't, it'll never be enough. I'm sorry, cannot do it. And until, if they ever would let me show them, if they would ever get to know me, and if there was anything I could do by knowing them, then maybe they would know I was sorry. But to say I'm sorry wouldn't cut it.
She's like inviting the victims' families to get to know her. It's
bitch,
very,
no.
I know.
No. Sit down and be quiet. Have a glass of water. Yeah. Go to bed early. I don't care. It's 7 o'clock at night. Go to bed and think about your life. And the thing is, Charity's like, she really wants us to know, you know, I've always had a job since I've been out. And, you know, that's really, really hard for someone who's been in prison. And I'm sitting there screaming, I cannot believe we're not talking about the men who didn't commit the murder who are still in prison.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that Charity is crying about how everyone's mean to her.
Right.
Like, this is ridiculous.
So Charity's out. She's like living her life. And then all of a sudden we meet a woman named Tammy.
My name is Tammy. And I relationship I had with Charity is I met her through the dog program when she was at prison. And from there we began to write. And eventually when she left prison, she moved here with us.
Charity met Tammy because Tammy, a hero, runs like a pet program.
The dog training program in prison.
She brings dogs into prisons. And that's where they met. And then when Charity got out, she went and lived with her.
And her daughter, Sydney?
Uh-huh. It's very unclear what their relationship is.
Well, they show a picture, right? Before we even get a lower third, of course, of Tammy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, is that her girlfriend? I jumped to conclusions with this photo.
Same. Because they're like, they're kind of kissing or whatever. It seems very much like this, like they're in a relationship.
Very intimate.
Never made explicitly clear.
But all Tammy says, and Tammy and her daughter Sydney are like, yeah, the neighbors hate us. This Charity moved in. Shit, they really hate us.
Yeah, and this is where I start to partially feel for Charity because, you know, Tammy is saying, like, Charity's doing the best she can. She's out in the world trying to get jobs. It's really hard for her. We start seeing, like, Yelp reviews of certain places that are basically just reviews saying, like, don't go here. Charity Payne works here.
Yeah, so the difference is, in my notes, I just have, Charity is still talking. Like, talking about herself exclusively. At this point, it's like, can we stop talking about Charity and how hard it is for her?
Uh-huh.
Because she's doing pretty fine.
Uh-huh.
Can we get those three guys out of prison?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like she's still talking and crying and refusing to apologize. And that music, the same four piano chords over and over and over again. And I'm like, I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. I was expecting Rod Serling to show up and be like, submitted for your approval. Like, what is happening? She's still talking.
Uh-huh. All right. Just to put you out of your misery, let's get to the end of this. Like, okay. How does this end?
It ends with Charity being out and crying and talking about herself and not having any remorse and not apologizing. And three men of color in prison. And me just really needing a glass of something. Whatever you got, I'll take it. That's how I feel. Those are my thoughts and feelings. Subtle, I know.
Girl, we did it. This was a really weird one. I feel like we stumbled our way through it.
Yeah, and we like stumbled across it. It was recommended a lot or suggested a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad it's over with.
Fam, just a quick reminder, please go right now and listen to the preview for our new podcast, Obsessed with Abducted in Plain Sight, hosted by me and the director of Abducted in Plain Sight, Sky Borgman. We are taking you behind the scenes of the film in the most amazing way with new interviews, deleted scenes, audio journals of the kidnapper himself, Robert Birchtold, that he recorded of himself in the 1970s that were recovered by the FBI. We're sharing a plot line that was left out of the film that I promise is going to blow your mind. You're even going to hear new stuff in the trailer itself. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. I will consider it a personal favor if you'll go and find Obsessed with Abducted in Plain Sight right now and subscribe. Girl, the Patreon.
The Pates, Lady Pates.
We are.
How's she doing?
She's great.
Great.
We're into the Aaron Hernandez documentary now.
Is she gangbusters?
She's gangbusters.
I
love her.
So long.
I know.
Looking gorgeous. Orange is Huge.
We just wrapped up Don't F with Cats. Mm-hmm. That was really rough.
It was.
Before that, it was Menendez. Before that, it was Lacey Peterson.
Yeah, Jodi Arias, Casey Anthony, The Jinx, Making a Murderer, The Staircase.
Serial Season 1.
Oh, dang.
Madeline McCann.
Yeah.
Every series you guys have ever wanted us to cover, it's there.
And ad-free versions of these episodes. I feel like we said that all the time, and then we stopped saying that.
It's true.
Feel like that's a thing that people want.
Girl, what are we doing next?
Gird your loins. Mary Kay Letourneau autobiography.
Oh, that's the A&E documentary.
It sure is.
She was the teacher that had an affair with an underage student.
Her sixth grade student.
Sixth grade?
Sixth grade.
What?
Oh, I have things to say. Everyone
sixth
buckle up.
Sixth grade?
Yeah, but he was left back. He should have been an eighth, says Mary Kay Letourneau. Bitch, no. No, bitch. Get the Galapagos turtles, tortoises, rally them up,
circle
you guys.
The tortoises. Circle them.
Circle the tortoises. The tortoises and I are coming very slowly, but we're coming from Mary Kay Letourneau.
Girl, where can they find us?
They can find us at truecrimeobsessed.com for all your TCO needs.
Yeah, we're at True Crime Obsessed on the Twitter, at True Crime Obsessed _ on the Instagram. You guys, I'm keeping you to say this. Every time you include us in your Insta stories, I see it and I react to it. I am obsessed with it.
Adorable.
Do stories about listening to our episodes. I love your stories about us. It's my favorite thing.
I gotta get in on that.
Yeah, it's so, so fun. Tag us, tag Jillian and I separately. I'm obsessed with it. We love you, you guys.
We love you. Thanks for hanging out.
You guys, stay tuned for the trailer for the Mary Kay Letourneau doc and our hilarious outtakes.
TM. That means trademark, everybody.
That's right. We love you.
We love you. Thank you so much.
All right, bye.
Bye.
1997, Mary Kay Letourneau, a gifted 35-year-old Seattle teacher, married, mother of four, pled guilty to 2 counts of child rape.
You understand that you have been charged with the crimes of rape of a child in the second degree, 2 counts. Do you understand that?
Yes. August 8th, 1997, I took a guilty plea.
Letourneau faces jail time, loses her right to teach in Washington and probably anywhere else. She won't be allowed to see the boy for anywhere from 10 years to the rest of her life.
I took a guilty plea because my attorney told me I should. I could take it to trial. But the goal was end the drama quickly for everyone. Who cares if I have a conviction? Just end it. The least amount of harm was the choice. Because it's not about me. It's about just saying some choices are not about sometimes stuff. Just say, there's other people.
That broke my heart when I heard her say
yeah.
that.
I mean, I'm sure the horrible music took you right out of it, though. It's truly horrible.
The music.
It's the same 4 chords over and over and over.
Charity was borrowing her. I'm trying really hard to say that word correctly.
Uh-huh.
Borrowing, not borrowing.
You can say borrowing.
Can I say borrow?
Mm-hmm.
She was borrowing her car.
If I can say borrow in Florida, you can say borrow. Absolutely. So we meet Tracy Bope, who's Charity's aunt.
Tracy Bope did her makeup for this interview.
She did it.
Or her like drag queen friend did her makeup
mm-hmm.
and was like, girl, you're going to look good.
You look good, girl. Angel was there. She looked good.
She looked good.
Turn around, girlfriend. Listen to that boy's song. Some of these people are just like, do you hear what you're saying? Tracy's like, she wouldn't hurt a fly. She's just running her mouth like usual, but she wouldn't hurt anybody. And I'm like, running her mouth like usual. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Touch up your makeup while you're on trial for killing your boyfriend's lover, I think, or killing your lover or something. Either way, it's all about the lover.
We yeah, got there in the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, powder your nose.
Right?
You're in prison. Powder.
She was the one that's like, I'll tell you what a bad decision is. It's when your parents go out and leave the keys in the car and you back the car into the garage door.
And my ears are just like, what, like nothing. It's like she's speaking Mandarin. Like I had no idea what she was talking about.
It is such a specific example that she must have done that herself 14 times.
100%. That's why she knows that.
Right.
But Sheila, so I have in my notes more on-screen text with like 8 O's. No callbacks, no nothing. She booked it. She skipped the callback, as a matter of fact. She booked it.
Oh.
Who does she think she is? Leslie Margarita?
Right.
Ellen Marsh? Get out of here.